This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 on a Tuesday night for Sci-Fi and Scream.
That's right, this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and I'm in the studio with Sonia. Good evening, Sonia.
Hello.
And tonight, Sonia will be doing a review of Barbarian Studio, and also an interview with Scott Mannin she did earlier, with he who is the director of Anima, a new sci-fi film, which is going to be really
an
massive.
Australian one, which is
an Australian one.
Extraordinarily
And so
good.
Now, what was that track, do you know?
Doctor Who, is it Rocking the TARDIS?
Not quite. Doctoring the TARDIS.
Oh, doctoring. Doctoring or Doctor In?
Doctoring.
Doctoring, yeah.
Oh, Doctor
yeah. In. It's a little thing after the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, little thing.
To imply the G is missing.
I remember now. I always thought it was rocking.
No ING.
I am wrong.
And in studio tonight, we also have Ben McKenzie and John Richards from the podcast Splendid Chaps. Good evening, guys.
Hello.
Good evening. Hello.
Good evening.
So we were sneaking in before you even introducing us.
No, they all thought I had a deeper voice suddenly or something and knew what I was talking about. So there you go.
Perhaps you'd regenerated.
You don't know?
Well, I got that wrong, didn't I? The Doctor Who track.
Doctor in the TARDIS.
But we were talking about that. It was a huge popular hit back in the day.
In 1988.
Yeah,
to
and
be honest,
we were
yeah.
talking on the Splendid Chaps Facebook page earlier about what was the last time a TV related song was that, like, because that was a huge hit. And yeah, we were trying to work out if there was anything. There was a regurgitator cover of the Are You Being Served theme. That's right. 99 that Triple J played quite
then,
a lot.
Then, like, in the mid 90s, like 96, I think it was, Spiderbait had quite a hit with Run, which was a cover of a song Bill Oddie wrote for the goodies.
Yeah.
And also on that album, Shasha Glover, there's a whole bunch of songs that have samples from Doctor Who and the goodies and a bunch of other stuff in it. So I don't know if that counts.
But I think it's a shame we don't have the trashy TV tie-in novelty hit happening anymore.
And we don't
What's
have
happened?
Hooked Ons anymore.
hooked on the Mad Men theme. Yeah, why isn't that happening?
Hooked on Splendid Chaps, which, what is Splendid Chaps? People are probably tuning in now and saying, what's all this about?
Well, Ben, you start. It was your idea.
Yeah. It was my
idea. You got us into this.
Well, this year, as everyone listening probably knows, is the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. So it's been around since 1963. And we're massive nerds for Doctor Who. So I wanted to do something to celebrate. And I hadn't really done... I've done a lot of performance, a lot of nerdy performance, but I haven't done anything Doctor Who related specifically. And I thought, well, this is the year. Let's do it. And I've also wanted to start up a podcast. And I thought, well, let's put those two ideas together. And it really clicked when I sort of realised that there are 11 months from January to November and there are 11 doctors. So you could do one every month, one for each doctor. And then from there, I thought, well, then the obvious choice for a name for this thing is Splendid Chaps, because that's how the Brigadier refers to the doctors in the Five Doctors. And I thought, I'm going to need someone to do it with me. Who could I possibly get who knows about Doctor Who?
Who?
And who knows about podcasting?
And I'm the queen of podcasting. So, yeah. So it's interesting because it's a performance. It's both a live performance and a podcast, which is really interesting. So it's an event you go to, a panel with guests and discussion and like a musical guest for our first episode. It's kind of like a really nerdy Tonight Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you said that, I'm like, it is like a nerdy, with two hosts as well, which I think is nice and equitable.
And then that will then be edited down slightly to become the podcast form. So if you're there live, you get to experience the excitement of live, and there'll be other stuff that won't go on the podcast. If you can't make it live, you can download the podcast on the 23rd of every month, which means that...
So this will be an ongoing throughout the next 50 weeks?
So it's a monthly thing, but that means the very last episode, which is going to be the one celebrating the 11th Doctor, who's Matt Smith, who we currently have in the role, will be recorded at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image and will be available on the 23rd of November, which is the 50th anniversary.
Whoa.
So it all ties in together.
It's beautiful symmetry.
It is. It's beautiful.
It? Time Lord stuff.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Welcome. This is Davros welcoming you to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Listen, or be exterminated.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9, and that was broadcast You and Me in Time, and we've got a message already. Richie from Sydney says he also agrees with me and says Matt Smith is the best.
He does.
And so goes Sonia.
Surprising.
No, it's not. He is the best.
I agree. He's in my top three for sure.
Top three. There's
David Tennant is another one. That's from Lil. She's a Joy member, and she says David Tennant was the best Doctor. And she's going into the draw as well for the Hitchcock film tickets. Excellent.
She mentioned that Lil also says, also my first Doctor. And there used to be a belief that your first Doctor would be your love. It used to be thought that the first Doctor would be the one that would be imprinted on you and you'd...
And that would be it.
Yes.
It's like Twilight.
Well, that's right. That, I mean, revealing that I'm hundreds of years old. John Pertwee was for a long time my favourite, because he was the first one I remembered, and he had all the cool frilled shirts and gadgets
and velvet velour pants.
Oh, I remember a velour pant. I do like a velour pant.
In the documentary they did for the 30th anniversary, do you remember this, John? They had a fashion person come on and talk about it, and she said, who can get away with velvet jackets and puffy sleeves? Only two people, John Pertwee and Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And one of them burnt a guitar. Not sure which one.
Maybe both. We don't know.
Yeah, maybe they both did.
Has anyone burnt the TARDIS down? Like arsenite?
Real ones, maybe.
What
real
gritty reboot of Doctor Who are you wanting, you crazy Kiwi?
The next one. The one where there's a woman as a doctor. Time for the controversy.
Oh, I'm totally into that. I reckon it'd be great.
I'm surprised we haven't had one already, in all honesty.
Why haven't we had one?
That means she would have to marry the TARDIS.
Then she'd be a lesbian.
Yeah, so then it's only until gay marriage is legal that there can be a woman doctor.
You're approaching this in an interesting way.
You drawn a long bow, but I'm all right with that. I think the doctor, man or woman, would totally marry the TARDIS regardless of any laws that we may or may not have here. He knows what's right and wrong.
Space, marriage is for everyone.
they can get married in Seattle.
New York as well.
Argentina.
Yep.
There's six states.
There's quite a lot of places.
Maine, no.
Or in the 51st century, anywhere.
This is an odd conversation.
It is.
It's also a geography lesson. And a politico studies lesson. But I also think they can get married on a naval ship, a British naval ship.
Really?
Yes.
Don't worry, she's a doctor. She can do it anywhere.
Anytime as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Anytime, before, after, whatever.
So what brought you to even think about doing something as... this is very ambitious.
Well, it wasn't quite as ambitious when Ben first mentioned it.
It's got more ambitious since I involved this guy.
I blame you. It's alarmingly ambitious. It was 11 shows, and we're now up to at least 16 of them, I think.
Yeah, we're going to do little mini shows. And one of them, the April one where we do Tom Baker, we've split into two shows because we're going to do that at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And each show's got a theme as well. Which we didn't mention. And the theme for the comedy festival will
be
comedy.
It'll be comedy in Doctor Who. Basically, how did it work? And in some cases, didn't.
Especially with the props. You're talking about the props.
That's inadvertent comedy.
Yeah.
It's actually interesting because when we said it's a nerdy Tonight show, it is weirdly intellectual and really shallow at the same time, which I think is going to be awesome. So the first one, we're looking at William Hartnell, who was the first Doctor.
Yes.
We've got the woman who designed the Cybermen, so Alexandra Tynan, who back in 1966 was the woman who said, I know, handles on the heads of robots. There's an idea. Genius! She's actually going to come in and talk about working on the show and working at the BBC.
They always remind me of teapots or something.
Well, that we can ask her. Are they teapots? Is that what they are?
It's a headlamp. They're like miners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And
we'll
because it's
out.
Made in Wales now, is there any connection?
I'm wondering.
Any canaries?
Oh, that's cyber canary.
Cybermen.
And I was going to say, we were also talking about the idea of authority. So we're going to get Alexandra talking about what it was like to work at the BBC, but also what is the Doctor as an authority figure? Is he a rebellious figure? Is he an authority figure?
How does he react to other people's authority?
And then Geraldine Quinn comes on the end to perform her nerdy song, Doctor Who's Companion. So there is something literally for everyone.
Is this burlesque or...?
She's cabaret.
More cabaret than burlesque?
It'll be a pretty straight up kind of rock and roll kind of... She's heavily David Bowie influenced, so she's having a great day today.
Yes. Happy birthday to our friend David. David Bowie.
Who never was on Doctor Bowie. Who, unfortunately.
He should have been on Doctor Who.
There was some rumour about that, wasn't there? That Dr. he was Bowie. Going to show up on the show or that he was a big fan. I can't remember.
It looks like he belongs in Doctor Who. Like, I can imagine him in some sort of funky outfit.
He is not just the Finn White Duke, but the Time Lord Duke.
He should be the next Doctor Who.
He should have played the Kylie Minogue role in that Christmas special.
Yeah. Now that would I would
has he ever been in a Christmas special? Because Christmas specials are a phenomenon of their own.
He was in the Extras Christmas. Oh no, actually, he was in an ordinary episode.
Yeah,
of Extras.
He was in the ordinary.
No, think about it.
But he is famously singing "Little Drummer Boy" with
oh, that's great.
Bing Crosby.
With Bing
or
Crosby.
Similar.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to see him doing a duet with William Shatner. But that's Trek and Star Trek. We're not talking.
I
about
I don't
that.
Think I'd want to see that.
I want to hear it.
We were talking about that though as well when we were talking about songs because John Pertwee did a track called "Who Is the Doctor," and which you were right about the title, by the way, John.
We realize all Doctor Who novelty songs have impossible titles to remember, but John Pertwee's "Who Is the Doctor" is really YouTube it now, people.
It's
Who is
really
the Doctor?
Good.
John
with
that Pertwee. Accent, the slight.
It's a big speech about him being the Doctor.
Yeah.
Wow.
Over the top of a kind of disco Doctor Who.
So
theme.
Kind of Richard Harris. Yeah. Camelot.
Yeah. Like way better than the William Shatner style, because he's not singing it, but he's speaking it rhythmically and but with real authority and.
Authority.
Yeah, it's great.
He's Shatnering it if that was a good thing.
We have a new message. Great show, guys. I love Matt Smith's episodes, but still miss David Tennant. My favourite Doctor growing up was Peter Davison, who dressed like a cricketer.
Excellent That's choice.
From
Excellent
Matt choice. Listening in Sydney. Thanks, Matt.
Nice work, Matt. Davison also in my top three.
Yeah.
Big fan.
I'm also a huge fan
I love
of
him.
Peter.
But how many are there? It's like seven altogether.
11.
Okay. It's like 7, 5, 10.
You're just
Come
guessing
on, guys.
Now. You're just picking numbers at random.
It's 11.
We've had another message. My favourite Doctor is, we don't know the name,
but
the one with the really long scarf that's from a Bobbin and Fitzroy.
It's
Gee,
Bobbin.
I wonder who that could be.
That dude.
That's Colin Baker. No, it's Tom Baker.
Tom Baker, who is literally the English William Shatner, as someone pointed out the other day. Like he genuinely fills that same cultural
role. He's mad.
Yeah.
And he speaks in a very distinctive voice.
No, he is. Yeah. He's quite.
He's had a resurgence in popularity in recent years. Yep. People love to send him. That's absolutely right.
It's weird that he serves exactly the same role. Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. I never thought of that.
And now we go to a trailer.
Si. È qui.
It's beautiful. And a big collaboration begins.
I didn't quite know I'd be working on this sort of film.
What's your problem?
I'll do this stuff.
After all, you're here to do a job.
This is not a horror film. This is a Santini film.
You was that you were an artist. That you were doing this for the love.
Sounds a little watery. Is there any fresh marrow?
Francesco tells me you are trying to escape.
There's no reason to escape.
Who's there?
Don't be afraid. A new world of sound awaits you. A new world that requires all your magic powers.
Berber and Sound Studio. This is Sci-Fi and Scream with a review about a very intriguing film that is out currently, showing only at Acme at Federation Square here in Melbourne. That's a disappointment that it's showing in just one place, but it certainly is a fascinating film. Now, it's set in the 1970s and it's based pretty much on a studio that sounds an awful lot like something that Dario Argento would work in, or perhaps Mario Bava or Lucio Fulci. So yes, it is based on Italian horror and it's all about a fellow played by Toby Jones called Gilderoy. He's English and he's pretty much not used to, I guess, the machismo of Italian filmmakers of that era in the 70s. So he arrives. He's hired basically by a filmmaker called Santini, who's based very much on the Argento sort of guys, to do the sound effects and be the Foley artist for a horror film. Although the Italians don't call it horror, they just call it a psychological thriller. But there's lots of mayhem and murder and madness, although you don't actually see it. The film is a fictitious film, and the whole plot is actually obviously fictitious, but based on giallo. The name of the film is called, and it's a great name, The Equestrian Vortex. With a name like that, you can't go wrong. And even the fake intro to the film is straight out of something from the mid-70s. Gorish looking, great graphics, fantastic style altogether. So poor Gilderoy has to come along, and he's gone straight from basically English nature films, where he collected sounds of birds and robins and so forth, to make the sounds of women being hatcheted, chopped or chainsawed as a Foley artist. So it's quite a departure of what he's used to, and it's very much about this poor character and how he suffers terribly from the lack of A, not being able to speak any Italian, which would have helped, and B, he hasn't been promised his recompense for his airline ticket. And along the way, we see how he becomes more and more frustrated as the film progresses. As I said, you don't actually see the content of the film, but you hear it in the screams of the actresses that are vocal actresses that are used for the soundscape, and also in the Foley artists when they're chopping everything from watermelons with axes and knives to cantaloupes and even the poor old banana or few get
from
the chop.
Watermelons to cantaloupes, bananas.
Bananas. Tomatoes and blenders actually make the great sound of a chainsaw going through a carcass.
Well, I don't know. I've never met that in real life. I've never met that situation in real life. So maybe
if you've
all
watched a zombie movie, you know where those sounds come from originally.
A tomato and a blender. So we'll never know really. Oh, maybe we will one day. But no, really, if that's
I'd
what
love
it
to
truly
experiment.
Sounds like.
Yeah.
How do you make the sound of tomato in a blender then?
Blah, 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 blah. Put a
blah. I know, that's what I was thinking.
Maybe. So he's this poor Foley artist that has not a clue what he's walked into. Meanwhile, there's fiascos going on of not just himself not being paid, but other technicians. And slowly we see him move into a world of absolute darkness and madness of his own kind. He's a very repressed individual and can't cope with what's going on around him, including some sexual harassment from some of the very macho Italian men who harass some of the women actresses. A couple of them leave. He then loses all the footage he has with the sound recordings and has to repeat them and repeat them. And slowly it becomes a total nightmare, almost a web and that he's tangled in and can't escape from. It's a fascinating film. I wouldn't call it scary. It's horrific as in psychologically drives you. You can see how he would go mad because he can't speak a word of the language and he just can't get that compensation for his ticket to get back to England. So the movie actually, spoiler, leaves you feeling hanging like himself, and you feel that maybe he doesn't get home.
So what would you give this? What would you give this movie, do you think?
I'm giving it a 4 out of 5, just because it has a beautiful soundtrack by Broadcast. The late Trish Keenan, who unfortunately passed away in 2011 from pneumonia that she contracted or developed while she was on tour in Australia, actually was very sad. She passed away at 42, but Broadcast, we played one of their songs earlier, about time and distance. Fascinating experimental electronica from the 90s. I'd say pretty influenced by Velvet Underground and so forth, but classic stuff. And of course that was the last time that she appeared in a soundtrack. It was for the Barbarian Sound Studio, if you can say that properly. Barbarian. Try saying that, Mitch.
Barbarian.
So it's held by Peter Strickland. He was the writer and the producer and director of this film. It's a little film. It's done very well in some more independent film festivals. It was at the Melbourne International Film Festival last year. Slowly it's making the rounds. I expect more people go and see it, hopefully. And it's only playing at Acme. 194 minutes of sound effect drama and gore and watermelons and cantaloupes and bananas and more.
Even a tomato in a
blender. Even a tomato in a blender.
Sounds pretty good to me. I think it sounds great.
I love sound effects, as Mitch knows.
And so I think we should go to a track from Broadcast. This is called Ominous Cloud, and this was from their album. So she died, did she?
Yeah, sad. She,
she died.
She died.
One. Oh, that's horrible.
2 years ago now.
I've never heard of anyone catching pneumonia in Australia.
You develop it, catch it, and unfortunately
caught it. see it.
They were
sometimes.
On tour, and yeah. she just kept going and wore herself out, and it was pretty tragic, indeed.
That's why you shouldn't work hard. I think everyone just hates working.
Well, musicians do when they're on tour. How many? I mean, look at Lady Gaga. How she keeps going like a robot.
That's true.
But that's another
topic.
This
is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hello, I'm Bruce Boxleitner, and you are listening to...
Sci-Fi and Scream.
She said it, Sci-Fi and Scream.
On Joy 94.9.
On Joy 94.9. See, I can follow a script.
Oh, you're good. You're an actor. You're good. Sonia from Sci-Fi and Scream, and we have on the phone line Scott Mannion, the writer and director of something called Anima, and it's one of the very rare occasions that we get to talk to somebody who's actually making a science fiction film in Australia.
Yes, in Australia.
Refreshing. What can you tell us about the film?
It's about a rogue scientist struggling to preserve his terminal wife in a virtual world of his own making. Yeah, it's kind of a low-key sci-fi in the style of like Tarkovsky, Kubrick, and sort of a bit of Terrence Malick in there too.
So yeah. It's more psychological type of drama as well?
Very much so, yeah.
Very much. Now, I believe it is a 13-minute drama sci-fi production, and it is due for its first viewing in January here in Australia.
Yeah, it's playing at Flickerfest, which is mid-January, and it's having its international premiere at Claremont Ferran, which is pretty damn exciting for the cast and crew to be playing there.
That is where?
That's in France. Probably the biggest short film festival in the world. It's in the top tier of all festivals, so yeah, it's pretty exciting to go out there.
Yeah.
Boon, it's great for an Aussie sci-fi to get that, because it kind of puts it on the radar that a genre film can play.
Something like
festivals like that.
I mean, it does sound very much like psychological thriller almost, because and very ambitious, this idea. So is it more minimalistic as far as special effects? How would you describe sci-fi aspect?
Special effects are quite, I mean, they're scaled. There's a lot of special effects. We had people shooting cosmological time lapse in Austria and people shooting macro, which is like sort of like microscopic fluid dynamics, and that was mixed with base CGI. So we really got some striking, strong effects that look like they cost, you know, lots and lots and lots of money. We were able to come in, you know, on a small budget that we group funded online. The result is stunning. It's like watching photoreal, you know, gaseous aurora clouds in the atmosphere. You know, when you use that fluid dynamics, it beats any equation a computer generation could come up with. Because it's real fluids, and when they're slowed down and you mix them with space CGI, it just has that very real effect to it. It just feels very naturalistic in terms of the generation.
Pretty old school as well, technique-wise. Was it budgetary or financial restraints there?
It was a technique I wanted to try out, to be honest. I'd seen it used successfully in The Fountain and Tree of Life, you know, Malick's film and Aronofsky's movie, to just create beautiful cosmological images. You look at those films and you go, how the hell did they afford that kind of CG when other, you know, massive big budget films? Just goes to show that the art world's pretty egalitarian out there. I just searched for the right guy and pitched the film to him, and he came on board the film pro bono. You know, it just goes to show, if you do put yourself out there on the internet, there are artists out there that are willing to be part of something and try to make it special.
Was it a lot of the funding through crowdfunding, Kickstarter and things like that? Did that help you?
Yeah, that was amazing. Again, the same sort of thing, reaching out to the community. I mean, it was a big concept, and a big concept film setting a big goal, and it was a great response. And I think also because of the technology addiction theme kind of prominent in society at the moment, with Facebook taking over, you know, and all social structures kind of changing, I think
it's
something that resonated with the community, and therefore we were pretty successful with we met our funding goals on Kickstarter and used the money to get the film started and make the film. It was a long process. It was a 2-year, it took about a year to sort of get the whole funding campaign ready, and then, you know, get into pre-production, and then finally, you know, the rest of the year making the film, and now we're just, you know, touring it. So it's funny, for 13 minutes of entertainment, it's such a long period of investment. People don't often realise how much time can actually go into short filmmaking as well.
I'm very curious about the background to the story itself. What was the inspiration there?
I experienced a bit of sort of, internet gaming addiction when I was younger, and I read into it, and there's a subculture in Japan called the Hikikomori, which are about 1 million people that are sort of stuck inside their rooms, and their only connections through technology. That kind of idea inspired me to sort of come up with a scientist had invented a way to communicate with his terminal wife, lives through his memories through a machine. So it's set in sort of modern times, or, you know, very close future. But it came from that idea that, you know, people would be escaping, like any drug, escapism. A lot of it's escapism. People, you know, take not all the time, but a lot of the time it's getting away from the hard things in life. You're escaping. So if you are addicted to something, that's what happens to him. He's escaping his own pain and then to relive the positive memories in his life and, you know, try to keep his wife alive within that. But that's where it came from, essentially, yeah.
Now, you've also, additionally to that, I believe that you got support or help or assistance from Patrick McGorry and another person, Philip Tam. Their background is psychology, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that was really great because very early on I was able to speak to Philip and talk to Pat. But Philip was great in the sense of research and understanding, the right at the forefront of the condition, because I had my own personal experience in internet research, but I really wanted to understand it at the core, and he dealt with it a lot at the moment. It's a big issue, especially psychologically. It's coming up heaps now,
yeah.
And more and more and more and more patients are coming as young kids are brought up on the internet, addicted to it, and, you know, and just having that take over their lives. And it's half of addiction is psychological. It's not just the chemical addiction, whether it's cigarettes or anything. You know, it's habitual, and these kind of addictions can be just as powerful and sometimes even worse. Through psychologists and education, you know, we just, lawmakers and everything, need to keep vigilant to keep catching up with what's going on so, you know, they can effectively keep, you know, society working and people in good condition.
I believe you can look at the trailer online. Where can people go to find out more?
If they go to www.animafilm.com.au. We kind of blog most of the journey of the film, so there's a lot of interesting stuff in there in terms of how it was made. And if anyone wants to come to Flickerfest in Bondi in mid-January, plenty of cool films playing as well.
Do you see Anima as becoming a feature film? Do you think it will expand? That often, you know, can happen with short films.
Yeah, that's possible. I've got another one that probably will, but I think with Anima, it is what it is. I think it's a story that was meant to be that size, but I do have a feature that is within the same tone, different story. So that's what I'll be going over to France with, that and another feature script, just to pitch and try to, you know, sell and do all that sort of business. I like all films. Like, I even like romantic comedies, you know. It's all good. It just happened to end up with sci-fi. Aronofsky's Pie.
That's a good one.
And the Sundance hit Primer, that's really good. If anyone wants to see a low-key sci-fi that is really, really clever and made for a low budget, watch that movie, Primer. Very good.
Fantastic. And so what happens to the film after France? Do you know what you might do then?
It's a massive market there. It's a really, it's a boon for the project in terms of getting a sales agent and, you know, trying to actually sell, because it's very rare to, you know, sell a short film and get it distributed on TV and the internet. They'll look at the film and say, oh, wow, we'll play that at our festival, and you get a bunch of invites, and, you know, it's a big market event.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for talking to us this evening on Sci-Fi and Squeam, Scott Mannion, and talking to us about your Australian sci-fi drama, psychological drama as well, about addiction to technology. I think we've all got a little bit of that. Yeah, good luck with Anima.
Thanks so much.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. That was great to chat to one of the very few filmmakers who are making an Aussie drama that's also science fiction. So that's going to be cool, and hopefully that'll get played in Australia soon in a wider release. It is going to France, to one of the biggest short film festivals in the world, so let's hope it gets picked up by some people there. And that's thanks to Scott Mannion. Good luck with that, Scott.
And we have a new message. Hi, my favourite doctor is Tom Baker, because The Mask of Mandragora is my favourite episode. It's my favourite episode of all time. I think because it was set in the early Renaissance, when there are so many gay artists historically. Regards, Ray.
Now, we were saying we thought Ray was pulling a bit of a stretch there to go between gay and Mask of Mandragora, but then we were just talking off air that, I mean, it's basically about Italian Satanists, episode. Yeah. But they do like to wear
a
frock.
Sounds like Twilight.
They like a bit of fabulous. They like some bling. They do like a big shiny thing.
Very shiny face mask. The face mask got like a beard on it as well.
It's a bear face mask. It's got this built-in beard.
A non-bear face mask.
So I'm kind of following that now.
And of course the name Mandrag.
Yeah.
Mandrag.
And we have another message. Tom Baker, but I did quite like John Pertwee as well. Also haven't watched any of the new series.
Any?
So I guess I can't comment on them. Although they are much better than the doctors from
the 70s. No, much hotter. Much hotter than the doctors.
That's true. Cheers, Jerry, from the counter, from the reception desk.
In the Dalek dress.
Sci-fi and Scream Nights.
And thank you to all the listeners in Sydney tonight. There seem to be quite a lot. Sonia likes people in Sydney. I like people in Sydney.
It's got a harbour. What can you say? excellent. We've got splendid chaps here. Two of them. We've got John Richards and Ben McKenzie talking about splendid things.
The performance podcast project.
The project.
Yeah. We should probably say where it is.
We really should.
Cares. The first one is this weekend.
Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah. It's going to be at Trades Hall at the Bally Union Bar in the back theatre space they've got there.
Yeah.
And it's going to be open at 4 o'clock. The show's going to start at 5 and we've got a really interesting lineup of guests. So we've got Alexandra Tynan, who we mentioned before.
Design the Cybermen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And we've got Lee Zachariah from ABC One's The
Bazura Project.
ABC 2's The Bazura Project.
Which was an awesome film review show, and he's a massive fan. Triple R's Narrator Haycock.
Cool.
The two of us, Petra Elliott is our announcer. Yes. So after you've been at Carnival, you know, and you've had a bit of sun, come and hide inside with us and talk about Doctor Who.
And we'll finish off with Geraldine Quinn and Doctor Who's assistant, which she's updating especially. So you can find a video of the original version of this song that was made for a Channel 31 TV show I did back in 2007 called Planet Nerd. You can find it if you search for it. But she's updating it because when we did it back then, there was no Matt Smith.
He didn't exist then. He wasn't real.
He wasn't even born.
He wasn't even live. No. Not in 2007.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
I don't know that version of Doctor Who theme with the zombie groan, but this is Sci-Fi and Scream. Anything is possible when Mitch is in control.
When I'm in control, there's groans in everything.
So, yes, we've been talking to some splendid chaps doing something splendiferous. A podcast, a very important podcast about the journey of the Time Lord. Doctor Who, 50 years old.
Yeah.
50 years plus?
Well, no, it'll be 50 in November.
Are you including the movies?
Well, they don't add any time, really.
Because they're in there. They're 65 there. And... 65 and 66, I want to
65,
say.
I think the first one is 66, yes. The second one. Yeah.
And they have... Well, listen, because we're doing these 11 episodes. We might do a 12th one, which is a Christmas special about the movies and things.
Or just about everything else about everything that didn't hasn't fit been.
In Are the, you doing one yeah. about the Christmas specials? Just about the Christmas specials?
Well, so we might do a Christmas special about Christmas specials.
Yeah.
And then the metatextual nature of our podcast will disappear into itself and become a black hole from which nothing can escape.
I like Sounds the good. One where he goes and becomes the Christmas spirit. And, you know, he goes back in that's time and best. Becomes friends with them. And
see, I think that's one of the greatest Doctor Who things ever made. I think that
was a really
fantastic.
Good one.
That is a really good one. I'm sorry, I thought you were making that up and going mad. But no, I know what that is now.
It's called A Christmas Carol.
Yeah. No, it was the thing about being a Christmas spirit and making friends with them, and it sounded like My Little Pony or something. And like, what?
No, he was making friends with the old man, the mean old man. Who's
Michael,
like,
Michael Gambon,
I hate
is it?
My dad. He's that, so mean.
That episode's actually really good.
That's the all I've watched is the Christmas episodes. So,
well, you got one good one, and then some rubbish.
Some rubbish.
Well, I think wasn't the last one like, I don't know this year's, but I know the last year's. They were like climbing into a box or something.
That was okay. It was a bit schmaltzy, but it was okay.
The evil snowman. He had that secret power to make boxes magic.
Well, he can
do
anything.
He can
do
whatever he wants, depending on the. Yeah.
Well, see, because I've been researching, because we're talking about William Hartnell in the first episode, reading about what his opinion of the character, he never liked it when they gave him, like, science stuff to say. He refused. He didn't want to. He thought it would confuse children. He said, because he's not a scientist, he's a wizard.
So he saw himself as a magic figure.
Yeah, well, I don't think literally, but I think he felt that's what the character represented. Like, it wasn't important how he did things, it was that you could trust that he could do
but
things.
This is one of the reasons why this is so interesting. So we keep talking about the fact that Doctor Who, we talk about being one program, and it's really dozens of TV shows.
You know what's going to happen.
Over 50 years.
You're going to go on and on. You're going to get to the end of the year, November 23rd. And you will have to then do a podcast about the year. That you did the podcast.
We'll start doing podcasts about the podcast you're listening to.
A 2-hour special.
You already did an episode zero that was that, essentially, except at the beginning. It's a podcast about the podcast to come.
So you can hear episode zero that is already there. If you go to, splendidchaps.com is the website.
Yes.
We're Splendid Chaps on Twitter. We're Splendid Chaps on Facebook.
Yeah, you can find us all over the
on
social
iTunes,
medias.
On iTunes, we're Splendid Chaps as well.
But
this is the thing. But there's so many different versions of Doctor Who, and fans get really angry when the version they want doesn't correspond to the one that's currently on air. So people like me going, no, it should be science. And other people are going, no, I like he's a wizardy, magic-y person. And obviously, William Hartnell felt that too. So, yeah. So who am I to judge?
And the people making the show disagreed with him. It's fascinating you do the research because we're trying to put the themes into the episodes so that we talk about things that haven't been talked about to death. Because obviously the program's 50 years old, so there's been a lot of people talking about it over the years. And the reason why we're putting themes in the episodes is partly just to make sure that we're talking about stuff that is different and interesting.
And what people may not know, or a different perspective or angle. I think you're going to be looking at a spirituality perspective.
Well, the second episode will be looking at evil. Yeah, so it's evil. The notion of evil in Doctor Who, and I think that will lead into religion in Doctor Who.
I think it will naturally lead that way,
because Doctor Who does have a fascinating approach to religion, which is it's strangely English in the way it kind of says, oh no, all religions are actually science. You've misunderstood, you silly man.
So it's very high Anglican.
Well, not even, it's weird, because it's almost like it's anti-Anglican. It's almost like it's actually against the notion of religion, except for Eastern religions, which is a lot more respectful to.
Yes.
So it's kind of an interesting show in that regard.
Well, some of the greatest Buddhist philosophers, I think, in the last 50 years were English. And
well, and Doctor Who has a lot of Buddhism in it, especially in the 70s.
Yeah, particularly that whole Pertwee era. Yeah. There's heaps of it in there.
And so it's kind of fascinating that you have, and I'm saying they're all different shows. The Pertwee era is different to the shows that were being made in Tom Baker's time. And in fact, there were three different producers and they all made a different show. So it's kind of fun that we can also use this to kind of argue points out, because the show itself is not a cohesive whole. You know, it is an argument even across the 50 years run of the show. Which hopefully means we'll get to discuss these issues and get to some depth and then have a song. And then everyone goes home.
So you will have artists performing in the podcast?
Oh, yeah, or comedians. Or Dean Arcuri. Dean Arcuri is joining us for the February edition. He's writing a new song. That's what he told me today. I've just dubbed him in.
I didn't know he sang. I can sing. Oh, I'll sing for you.
Mitch.
We'll put you on the list.
I'm typing him now on the list.
I can see. The listeners can't, but I can, and you're not writing anything down.
I didn't want
Doctor, Doctor Who.
Yeah, right.
We've actually been going through the last couple of days all these terrible Doctor Who novelty singles just to see what's out there. Like Bulla Makanka were an Australian band who were most famous for Give Me a Home Amongst the Gum Trees, which was then also the
their
theme
version
to Burke's,
of that theme was the theme to Burke's Backyard.
Yeah, they did a song called either Doctor Who or The Ballad of Doctor Who or Doctor Who is Going to Fix It, depending on where you see it
Give
referred
me
to.
A Home Among the Time Lords.
Well, it was pretty much something. It was pretty much that.
It's got great lyrics like this, because the first verse is all about the fact that the guy is sitting watching TV and he's got nothing else to do, and then the line is literally, he says, and then along comes this amazing cove, they called him Doctor Who. I'm like, what, who is gonna fix it?
Yeah, oh,
it's great.
There are some astonishing novelty tracks out there for Doctor Who.
This is too exciting. It is too exciting.
I'm excited.
And there's so much in this world for us to play with and explore and have fun with and discuss. So I think this is gonna be a really fascinating project for the year, and you should come.
We'd love to, and I think it's going to go on.
We would love to, and I will sing.
Whether you like it or not, exactly. But we're there with you 100%, because Doctor Who is something that on Sci-Fi and Scream we've had our moments when we haven't been able to tackle it properly. Mm-hmm. And it's time to confess.
Did you hear what Sonia's going to do? Did you hear her New Year's resolution?
What's your resolution?
She would never say no. And in that last interview, she had pizza with him. No,
no, we won't talk about
no,
pizza.
No, not that resolution.
Not that
sorry.
One. We're going to watch every single Doctor Who episode this year.
What's your 50th
year
project?
You may never see us again.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
We may die.
Have you done the maths? Because that's a lot of hours.
We've worked out at 6 hours or 4 stories a week.
Oh, that's not too bad.
And what about the missing ones? What are you going to do with the ones that the BBC wiped? You're not going to listen to the audios or
we'll
any
just
that
have
kind
the
of.
Static on or something. I don't know.
Because recordings exist for the audio for all
I know.
But
I've
one.
Heard that.
I think that's I think, right.
Yeah.
So what was the deal there? They destroy them because?
Oh, well, because for the BBC at the time, it was just a thing that was played once. TV was only ever played once, especially in England. It was never repeated. After a certain amount of time, they didn't have the rights to repeat it. So as far as they were concerned, this was dead stock, and videotapes were really expensive.
And so the early ones weren't even on videotape. They were on, these canisters.
And that's the thing, people kind of,
wax.
It
wax cylinders.
Yeah. It seems insane to us now, but the truth was, at the time, they did not see television as it was more like live theatre in England. Like, it wasn't a thing you were going to ever see again. So why did it matter if they had a copy of the Daleks on the shelf?
There is a feeling. It does feel like pantomime, some of the early Doctor Who.
Yeah, this is partly because
sense to well, it.
It's about how it was made. Mm. Like, they had 75 minutes of time in a studio to record a 20-minute episode of television. So they couldn't. Wow. They didn't have the time to re-record things, which is why there's, particularly in the early ones, you see there's all these scenes where people have clearly made screw-ups with their lines, and William Hartnell's famously, you know, doddering around, and you can
tripping
never tell
over some prop.
Yeah.
Well,
you can never tell how much of his character was him, you know, acting, and how much was him actually not being able to remember his lines
in the background. For some of them.
One of my absolute favourites is when Azabi runs into a camera. That is just—it's a gorgeous moment to watch an alien run straight into a camera.
Or the Vord who trips over his own flipper. He's like the Star Trooper. It bumps his head.
Yeah,
great.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Armin Shimmerman. You're listening to Sci-Fi Scream on Joy 94.9. Live long and be prosperous.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And I'd really like to thank the guys that have come in tonight, Ben McKenzie and John Richards from Splendid Chaps.
You pause. We've been saying it like a million times.
We are splendid. And they so are you. Thank chaps. You so much for having
Thanks.
Us.
And I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you to all the listeners tonight. Thank you for everyone who did message in and told us their favourite. Like, now I know, I think I've got a couple. You never mentioned your favourite, did you, Sonia?
My favourite Doctor? Oh. Yeah,
oh, there's just
hard.
So many.
I really love Tom Baker for sentimental reasons. The look, the attitude he had, the fluffy hair, the randomness.
None of us mentioned Sylvester McCoy as well, who's currently in The Hobbit.
But yes,
and
Sylvester
he's
McCoy.
Such a lovely man.
Radamagast.
Met him.
Radagast,
he's
yeah.
lovely.
Radagast, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome
so
man.
Big thumbs up for Sylvester McCoy.
And great. I really loved him. That was one of my favourite periods of the show when he was in it. I thought he was great. Mm.
So tune in next week, guys.
Yes.
Same time, same place.
And thanks to the Splendid Chaps and good luck, Ben and John.
Thank you. SplendidChaps.com.
Yeah. With the podcast that has everything.
This
Doctor
is
Who, that is.
Yeah, no Star Trek.
Shut up. I like Star Trek.
Well, I like it as well.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together.
But human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.